Welcome to Physicians Weekly.
Welcome to this episode of Physicians Weekly's podcast. I am your host, Dr. Rachel Giles from Medical Medical Publishers, in collaboration with Physicians Weekly. Today's episode features two interviews taking different lenses on news in hearing loss. The Food and Drug Administration approved a long-awaited rule on August 16th, which was written by Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, and Democrat Senator from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren. And this rule will give millions of Americans a more affordable and more convenient solution to their hearing loss, over-the-counter hearing aids. The new devices, designed for those with mild to moderate hearing loss, are expected to transform the hearing aid market, and they will be sold at stores and online without a medical exam, prescription, or special fitting by an audiologist, and could be available by mid-October, according to the FDA. The FDA estimates that the change will save consumers on average about $2,800 per pair. In today's podcast, we first talked to Dr. Frank Lin at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine about the various obstacles to hearing health, including new advice on the just-released over-the-counter hearing aids. He's been part of this FDA rule from the very start, and he can tell us a little about how this all came to be, and also what some of the perhaps unexpected benefits might be.
The Physicians Weekly podcast provides thought leader insights on the latest medical news, clinical trial coverage, and advances in medicine and healthcare.
After Dr. Lin, we speak with Dr. Susan D. Emmett. She's an associate professor of otolaryngology and head and neck surgery at the University of Arkansas. She recently led a randomized controlled trial in 15 communities in rural Alaska, looking at whether telemedicine specialty referral would improve the time to follow up for school hearing screening compared with standard primary care referral. 15 communities were randomized, and 8 of them, so that was 750 kids in one arm of that trial, received the telemedicine referral, and 7 of the communities, which was 731 children, received primary care referral. Stay tuned to hear the results of that trial, which was recently published in the Lancet Global Health Journal. Enjoy listening. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Lin. I'm really curious about how did this come to pass that we finally have over-the-counter hearing aids?
This really began about 8 years ago. And in 2014, I just began all my research looking at my clinical intuitions about how hearing appeared to be important for cognition dementia. And then at that point, we published a series of papers linking hearing loss to dementia for the first time. And yeah, at heart though, I'm a surgeon, basically meaning, okay, this research is interesting, epidemiology links hearing dementia, but honestly, man, what are you gonna do about it, right? Namely, hearing aid as ENT. Hearing aids are so expensive. The average patient of mine, average customer trying to get hearing aids in the States, the average cost is $4,700, right? Which, to put that perspective, that could be for the average American, it could be your third largest material purchase in life after a house and a car, which is crazy. So around that time, we realized, and I realized, that there are broader constraints at work. Even in the future, we showed that treating hearing loss even reduce the risk of dementia. So at that point, I began engaging the national academies. In 2014, we had an initial workshop on hearing loss and healthy age, which I chaired for them. That was a meeting which was important because it convened a lot of stakeholders. And then the FDA was there, and we actually directly made the question to FDA, why are there not OTC hearing aids? Because it seems to be a big rate-limiting step between why there's not greater access and lower costs. If there's more competition in the space right now, many people don't realize, but the hearing aid space is incredibly constrained. There are 5 companies that control 95% of the world's hearing aid marketplace. That's because how they're regulated. They're basically regulated as medical devices, but the way they're regulated is that they can only be sold through a licensed provider like me or Audio. You just can't go to a store and buy one. So in 2014, we had the initial workshop that led a year later under President Obama, the White House President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. Every 10 years, they have a White House conference on aging. And the theme of that year's conference happened to be technology and aging. How do we harness technology that best improves older adults' lives? Based on that theme, it was apparently President Obama's personal request that his PCAS Council look at the issue of hearing aids. And I think that was partially, in part, inspired by the National Academy report from the previous year. I worked with them on that report. They had recommendations where the FDA should immediately re-regulate hearing aids to allow for over-the-counter sales. Then a year later, the National Academies convened a formal consensus study, provide recommendations that to the government. I was involved with them as well at that point. Again, our recommendations were the same thing, said FDA should do this. Then amazingly, this is where, as dysfunctional as sometimes we think the U.S. government is, there are a lot of pieces that work really well. And what I mean by that is that at those meetings and readings reports were policy advisors from Senator Warren and Senator Grassley's office. And they realized this could be potentially a real bipartisan issue. I think bipartisan in a way that spin it, but you could spin it both ways. From the right, you could spin this is breaking down monopolistic barriers to increase competition in the marketplace. From the left, you could really spin this as this is pro-social welfare. This is increasing access and affordability for older adults who can't afford hearing aids. In 2017, Senators Grassley and Warren on the Senate side. On the House side, Marsha Blackburn and Joe Kennedy, these were the co-sponsors. They sponsored an over-the-counter hearing aid bill that got attached as a rider to the FDA reauthorization bill. And there was a long debate there. I had a test fight for Congress on it, but that got passed in August 2017. And that was legislative law instructing the FDA to re-regulate hearing aids. They technically had a three-year timeline. They sort of blew through it by a couple of years. They blame it on COVID, but that's okay. But as of August 2022, we have the final regulations released now for over-the-counter hearing. So it's a sort of a long and winding story, which is crazy. But I really think in the end, it's a feel-good story because it's honestly effective governments and smart regulations, increasing competition in the marketplace, ultimately to benefit consumers and patients, while also allowing for, honestly, more competition and fresh blood in the industry in a very, very stagnant marketplace.
Right. So as sort of a consumer, because my parents have hearing aids, they go to Costco to buy them. And they say, yeah, it costs a ton of money and they're crappy. They just don't work well. How is the technology going to be improved from the user perspective now that we've got some good competition?
This is really interesting. So right now, your parents' complaint is not uncommon, right? Just hearing aids, they don't seem to work that well. They don't work with my phone, they don't work seamlessly with my electronics, things like that. So I think there are a couple of converging things here, which is really interesting. One is right now, the way hearing aids are regulated, previous regulations that were set in 1977, they basically made hearing aids could only be sold through a licensed provider, and hence there's actually five hearing aid companies around the world controlled entire world's marketplace, and companies like, let's say, Apple, Samsung, big consumer tech companies, which clearly make hearing aids. You've never seen an Apple or Samsung hearing aid because they would never make one because they would not be able to sell it directly to the end user. They can only sell it through a licensed provider like me and resell. That's not what their business model is. So the advantage of going to an OTC market like this is we anticipate, and our companies are beginning to move in this space, a lot of interest from the big consumer tech companies. Because it's a huge market. I mean, 40 million Americans have hearing loss. That's around over 70. So it gets interesting, and this is sort of tongue-in-cheek, but if and when Apple eventually comes out with a hearing aid, I guarantee you it's going to work seamlessly across their platforms of technologies. And the reason why I think it's so important is because increasingly, anyone who uses hearing aids, not like you use hearing aids and nothing else. It needs to operate within your technology ecosystem to make it useful. And I think that's what's going to happen. They're going to really be designed for the end user mind. Whereas, this is going to sound weird, but the way hearing aids are designed now by the big five companies that make hearing aids, they're actually not really technically designed for the end user. They're really designed to be sold to the audiologist, to be sold to you, which can slightly pervert how you design certain features, how you design certain technologies, if the end user actually is the paying customer, right? Just slightly changes how you design products. So I think that's one big thing is incentives are different when you sell directly to the end user. You get increased interest from these big consumer tech companies, which can innovate at a much broader scale and a much faster scale. And the last thing I'll mention is there's something coming out that's rolling out in the next few years called Bluetooth AuraCast, A-U-R-A-C-A-S-T. And what that's going to be finally happening is going to allow Bluetooth to operate at much farther distances and transmit sound. So what I mean by this is in the future, in the next couple of years with the current rollout plan, is you'll be able to go into a theater and you'll be able to pull up on your phones like Wi-Fi. You'll be able to pick the signal you want. And if you have any pair of compatible Bluetooth headphones or hearing aids, you'll be able to tune right into the sound state. Like case in point, I just came back from an overseas trip and I was in the airport and I was trying to listen to the TV, but I couldn't hear it. In the future, if that TV is a Bluetooth transceiver, you'll be able to pump your phone. I want to listen to gate number 18, the TV, and you'll be able to listen right to it. So I think those technologies are increasingly converging, especially with OTC hearing all at the same time. is going to all of a sudden get this aspect of universal design or accessible design. Those technologies become useful for anybody who just wants to hear well. There are a lot of the technology side just happening in the next couple of years, which is finally going to make, I think, hopefully for your parents, technology like that more and more useful.
Absolutely. And if I think about the provider's perspective, how are things going to change for our physician colleagues?
So it's interesting. Physicians as a whole don't necessarily get that involved in hearing aids. And what I mean by that is in every single state right now on the books are laws that says hearing aids can only be sold through a licensed provider. And licensed provider in almost all states means an audiologist and hearing entrance specialist, which is a hearing aid technician, or essentially a physician. Now, that being said, though, very few physicians, some ENTs do directly sell hearing aids, but it's usually the audiologist or the hearing entrance specialist who sometimes may be under the employ of an ENT practice. So ENT practice, quite simply, and I'm an academic, so this really doesn't affect me, but I know some private ENT practices make a ton of revenue off selling hearing aids because it's fundamentally a gatekeeper model, as we are the gatekeepers as clinicians, physicians, audiologists that prevent customers from buying it on their own. So it's a huge money driver for some practices, quite simply. That business model is going to rapidly change. With OTC, we got written into law, this federal preemption of state laws that prevent any state now from restricting over-the-counter sales. So any of our patients who otherwise had to buy hearing aids from the past will now be able to buy it on their own. So I think in the end, it clearly in the short term, I think it's very disruptive for certain types of practices who derive some revenue from hearing aid sales. But in the long run, it's good overall. The reason why I think it's good overall, because ultimately it drives more interest in the audiological services our audiology colleagues are providing. Because listen, some people will be able to benefit from OTC hearing without any help, but I can tell you there are a whole bunch of older adults or adults in general who would still benefit from a consultation appointment with an audiologist, learn what to do, how to use those hearing aids, etc. So overall, I think it's going to drive practices more to providing services as opposed to just being a glorified hearing aid salesperson, which is how some practices currently operate.
And do you think it's going to contribute to overcoming the stigma? I mean, it's a mild stigma, but there is a stigma associated with wearing a hearing aid.
Among the barriers to quote-unquote hearing aid use, or something like that, right? Just a straight up number there. So in roughly about 15 to 20% of people with hearing loss use a hearing aid. So it's been phenomenally low. It doesn't really matter what country you're in too much. So the reason why I mentioned that is that there are a lot of barriers for why that's so low. A few are obvious. So access, the only way you get a hearing is you go through multiple different steps. You have to go to ENT, audio, et cetera. Cost is a huge one. That awareness that hearing is important, that hearing could be impactful for things that save our risk of dementia. And finally, the device utility, it's got to integrate well with technology. And usually in those barriers I mentioned, I usually don't consider stigma its own barrier. I consider stigma wrapped up in all those other ones that people don't think it's important, that technologies aren't useful, they're not ubiquitous, they don't integrate well with your lifestyle. So I think stigma is a part of every single of those as opposed to its own entity. It's wrapped up in all those. You tackle all the ones, awareness, access, technology utility, being useful in your everyday life with, like, let's say, listening to theater, and then also issues of the overall design of these products, and there's more ubiquitous. I think that's what really gets a stigma, rather than try to have public service messaging saying, hearing aids are cool, right? Or having Bill Clinton show up with his hearing aids, or Ronald Reagan. People always love to say, when Ronald Reagan first started wearing hearing aids in the 80s, it increased hearing aid sales by like 20%. But you're still not getting at the root cause issues, which are access, awareness, technology design, and things like that.
So if we do see an uptake in hearing aid use, which I expect we will, do you think we'll have an intervention for cognitive disorders as well? Going back to you, can you do a prospective study for your academic research?
That was the original observational epidemiologic studies, I guess I'm sort of known for, is back in 2010, 2012, really laying out the foundation for now understanding of how hearing loss is arguably the single largest risk factor for dementia because of these mechanistic pathways through how hearing puts a load in the brain or it can lead to change in the brain structure. So that gets at the next question as a surgeon too then is, well, does that mean if I treat hearing loss with what I do, does that actually reduce the risk of cognitive decline or dementia? So we cannot answer that question from observational studies because you can imagine some of these observational studies, people have used hearing aids, they do better than people who don't use hearing aids. They actually do, but we can't really attribute that to the hearing aid for obvious reasons, because people who get hearing aids versus those who don't are very, very different. They're likely to be healthier, wealthier, better educated, etc. So it calls for a randomized controlled trial. Fortunately, This has also been planning since 2015. We've been working very closely with the National Institute on Aging. It's called the ACHIEVE trial, the Aging and Cognitive Health Evaluation Elders Randomized Controlled Trial. This is a $20 million trial funded by the National Institute on Aging, or tax dollars at work here in the United States. And that trial is finishing up at the end of this year. It's a trial I lead across the United States, four different centers all over the U.S. It basically looks at 70 to 84-year-old adults with mild to moderate hearing loss. That's the bread and butter hearing loss that probably about half of seniors in that age group have, that level of hearing loss. They've been randomized one-to-one to either get basically best practices hearing intervention, audiologists, fitting hearing aids, all the technology they need. The other arm gets a control intervention, which is basically one-on-one sessions with a health educator going over healthy aging topics like nutrition, diet, exercise. So everyone has the same amount of exposure to study personnel. That's a very important control. Everyone's then being followed for 3 years. We're looking at rates of cognitive decline, rates of dementia, as well as brain MRI scans on a half sample, social isolation, a whole bunch of measures like that. Our last participant is going to have their final three-year visit in November of this year. So basically first quarter or second quarter next year, we'll have trial readout results of the definitive RCT of if you treat hearing loss in older adults, do we in fact reduce the risk of things like cognitive decline, dementia, and brain atrophy? So we're really excited about that. So that's also converging in the next year too. All at the same time with OCT and all of a sudden imminent availability of much more affordable, innovative, accessible technology. Really excited about the science side of things. And more importantly, from my point of view, not only science side of things, but the more pragmatic economic side of things that actually makes this actionable if indeed the trial results show a signal.
Thank you so much for talking to us today. So next, I get the opportunity to speak with Dr. Susan D. Emmett, Associate Professor of Otolaryngology and Head and Neck Surgery at the University of Arkansas. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Emmett. Could you just briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Dr. Susan Emmett. I'm an Associate Professor of Otolaryngology and Public Health at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, and the director of the UAMS Center for Hearing Health Equity.
Wonderful. What was the unmet need that made the study that you did in Alaska particularly important, especially for resource-restricted communities?
Schools are often the only source of preventive services for rural children. School screenings, such as hearing screening, are an example of an important preventive service that schools provide. Yet, even if children are identified through screening, often they never actually enter the healthcare system to receive the care that they need. Loss of follow-up is a problem not just in Alaska, but in all screening programs across the U.S. and internationally. Compounding this challenge is a scarcity of specialists from rural areas to provide that follow-up care.
Thank you. And how did the research team set up the study? And what was the design? What was the primary endpoint and so forth?
We used a cluster randomized trial design for this study. About 1,500 children were enrolled from kindergarten to 12th grade across 15 rural communities in Northwest Alaska. And we randomized communities to either receive telemedicine or the standard of care, which was typically a letter home to parents. The primary endpoint that we used was time to follow up. And we measured this for 9 months after the date of screening. In addition to the trial, community and stakeholder engagement were integral to this study. We had an Alaska stakeholder team that worked alongside the scientific team from beginning to end. We incorporated mixed methods into the design, including pre-trial focus groups, where community members helped to refine the study protocol, as well as over 100 semi-structured interviews during the trial to learn about stakeholder experiences with the intervention.
Okay, great. And what were your primary results?
The results highlighted the power of telehealth to improve access to care for rural children. In this study, children identified in school screening as needing additional care were more than twice as likely to receive follow-up in the telehealth pathway, and follow-up happened over 17 times faster. Through interviews, we learned about community perceptions on the impact of hearing loss and gain contextual understanding of the trial findings, which is essential as we continue to scale this work.
And what are some of the broader implications to improve access across specialty care fields?
This trial has incredibly important implications for rural children globally. We use school hearing screening as a model, but the concept of specialty telemedicine referral could be applied to a host of other preventable health conditions, including vision loss, developmental disorders, and even behavioral health. Rural communities around the world face a common challenge of scarcity of specialists. Advancements in technology that improve access to care are a paradigm shift that could change the landscape of health disparities in rural areas. Just imagine specialists located hundreds or thousands of miles away, providing care in the most rural and remote communities.
Right. And does the recent FDA approval of over-the-counter hearing aids have any impact on the access in these communities?
Absolutely. FDA approval of over-the-counter hearing aids is a great example of an advancement that can empower Americans with affordable, accessible hearing technology. While that approval is specifically only for adults, the concept of expanding beyond a traditional medical model is key for addressing a public health challenge of this scope and size. There are an estimated 1.6 billion people living with hearing loss globally. That's one out of five people on the planet. And this number is expected to rise to one in four by 2050. We need creative solutions to reach that many people.
And are there other technological or organizational developments that will support and expand on care access in rural communities?
I do think there's so much we can do with technology to expand access to care in rural communities. Tech developments span from mobile and wearable devices to automation and artificial intelligence that supports task sharing, such as through community health workers. Technology is advancing so rapidly that the concepts of a virtual hospital and virtual healthcare could soon become reality. The bottom line is that we can leverage technology to meet people where they are, expanding access into rural homes, schools, and community settings.
Okay, great. And were there any other points you wanted to make, Dr. Emmett, to your physician colleagues with regard to these topics?
To truly expand access to care for rural children, we must convert research findings into sustained impact. At the new Center for Hearing Health Equity that I direct, we have multiple funded research projects to address the problem from every angle, from understanding etiologies unique to underserved communities, to innovations to improve access, and even device development for tools that are needed to do this work. At the core of what we do is translating research findings into policy change. As physicians, we should challenge ourselves to ensure sustainability in our work. This is ultimately how we'll change the narrative of rural health disparities.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time. That's all the time we have for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Physicians Weekly is produced in collaboration with Medicom Medical Publishers and Physicians Weekly.